Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, April 18, 2017. I am Jason Powell on ProWrestling.net on Tuesday. My WWE Raw hit list, Will Pruitt's pause review of WWE Raw. Plus, we'll have live coverage from Jake Barnett of WWE SmackDown as the show airs on USA Network. And we'll have live coverage of 205 Live, courtesy of Zach Zimmerman. Coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of WWE Raw. WWE Raw was in Columbus, Ohio at the Schottenstein Center on Monday. A show, of course, aired on USA Network, and I don't know that they told us what the attendance was. Seemed like it was a big crowd, but we haven't had any correspondent reports from the show to let us know if it was a sellout or not. WWE usually pretty good. Possibly I missed that. The broadcast team this week was Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Booker T. Booker is filling in for, I think they're saying a few weeks, but I think originally it was like 6 weeks, they said, because David Otunga, who was moved over from SmackDown to Raw, is off filming the movie Katrina, and the shots of that movie that they've released with him posing are something else. I don't know that this is necessarily going to win an Oscar, but I don't know that the acting could be worse than what we saw at one point on this show. We'll certainly talk about that as we work our way through it. They open things up with a recap of the Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns angle from last week, and then we ended up having ring announcer JoJo introduce Braun Strowman. The only thing they really told us about this show in advance was that Braun Strowman was going to open things up, and they kind of left it at that. And right there, I do have a gripe, because this show also ended up featuring Jeff Hardy against Cesaro. It featured Chris Jericho against Samoa Joe. And there were some other things on the show, like, why aren't you advertising anything in advance? Why aren't you trying to get people to watch this show? Certainly when you had Braun Strowman and Big Show in the match, the last time they had a match was pretty damn successful. People were into that. Surely if you, I mean, I know they told a story with that, but still at some point, you know, there were things on this show that should have been advertised. I'm curious to see, I expect the numbers to go down coming off of the Superstar Shakeup, of course, and WrestleMania, you know, the after show the week before and all of that. But don't you try to counter that as much as you can by advertising a few things? Now that said, Strowman came out. He ended up getting more boos than cheers from the Columbus crowd. And I got to say, that surprised me a bit, just because when he roughed up Roman Reigns last week, that angle was so over the top. I think a lot of us just assume this guy is now the biggest babyface in WWE, and that, you know, who's going to boo this guy? But there were people who booed him. Now, it did change quickly when he boasted that he broke Roman Reigns in half. That line got more cheers than boos. So at least some of those people, I think, were booing both guys. You know, first Roman when he came out, and then basically booing Roman Reigns by cheering Strowman after that line, if you know what I'm saying. Strowman said he's proud that Reigns left in an ambulance and has a separated shoulder and cracked ribs, and he said he's damn proud to say Reigns would not be on this particular Raw. Strowman said he had... he would show the entire locker room he is a monster among men. That's kind of the new phrase they're using. They used it repeatedly on this show. Well, Kurt Angle came out, the general manager of Raw, and asked Strowman what he was trying to prove. Said he'd done enough damage. Strowman said there was more to come. Angle said that's the same thing Roman told him before the show went on the air, and he said that he was giving Reigns what he wanted by giving him a match with Strowman at the appropriately named Payback Show. So no surprise there. Strowman said that it will be Roman's funeral, and Angle said they'll find out in a couple of weeks. Strowman asked, what about this show? And Angle told him that Strowman should be suspended. I'm like, well, you could. You have that ability, Kurt. But Angle said that Strowman had done enough damage and should take the rest of the night off. Strowman said Mick Foley is to play these same games with him. He said, I want competition or else. And Angle asked what that meant, and Strowman dropped the mic and left the ring. Good segment as far as I like the announcement. I like the way they kind of set that up for Payback. I thought Angle was effective here. There wasn't any clowning around from Kurt on this particular show. Kind of a brief night for Kurt. I think this was the only time we saw him. I don't know that we saw him the rest of the night. But they, you know, set the stage for Strowman. Basically, I mean, they set up the pay-per-view match, obviously, that I think most of us assumed was coming. The only question, I'm sure some fans are like, he's Roman's coming back that soon? And hey, I probably would be right there with you if it wasn't for the fact that it's been pretty well known that they're going with Roman and Strowman at Payback. It is too soon for him to come back from that beatdown. But keep in mind, this is a guy who was pushed face first. You know, well, he ended up landing on his face, but he was pushed off the loading dock on a stretcher, had an ambulance tipped over, and didn't have a single mark on him. So, but anyway, they did a good job of setting that up. But I think the thing that worked here even more so was that the mystery of what Strowman was going to do. I mean, he's made good on these teases for more violence in the past. You know, the whole, I think there's times where the "or else" line gets a little bit cheesy, but it's starting to mean something. Where when he says "or else," you know, carnage, or at least he intends to leave some carnage by the time all is said and done. And so it's kind of a mystery. Like, all right, what's he going to do next? And after last week, if you saw that big angle, how would that not be effective? Wouldn't you want to see what the hell this guy's going to do? Cole ended up piping a four-way to determine the number one contender for the Raw Women's title. Mickie James, Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax, and Sasha Banks. And then Graves hyped Dean Ambrose appearing on Miz TV. And then Cole said that Chris Jericho and Samoa Joe would be coming up after the break. Hey, the number one contenders match for the Raw Women's title, something else that could have been advertised. And it is possible that, like, in the hour leading up to Raw, I missed something. But I'm still, you know, throughout even the weekend, or God forbid a week in advance, but even just sometime today, you know, long before the hour leading up to things, announce a few matches, WWE, that when you have matches that you think people would want to see, and in this case, they had several that I think, especially for that online audience, that these announcements would have appealed to. I can't say that Ambrose appearing on Miz TV is one that I would have hyped in advance. We've kind of been there and done that, but more on that in a little bit. Seth Rollins made his entrance, and they went to a commercial. And then Rollins ended up joining the broadcast team on commentary for the opening match, which was Samoa Joe defeating Chris Jericho in 9 minutes and 5 seconds. Jericho ended up pushing his... Like, Joe got him in the coquina clutch, which is a sleeper when he's standing up. And Jericho kind of pushed his way off the ropes. And in doing so, he got Joe into a pinning situation. Joe kicked out, but he maintained the hold and then wrapped his legs around Jericho. And that's when it becomes, in my mind, like, all right, there's a difference. You know, he's kind of grapevining him and applying this hold. Then it feels like it's a little bit more than just your standard sleeper, but whatever. Jericho ended up tapping out to that. Then after the match, Joe took the mic and addressed Seth Rollins. He mocked him by calling him the Mighty Kingslayer and asked Rollins if he remembered what it sounded like when he first arrived in WWE. He said he remembers it well. It was the sounds of joints and ligaments popping and Rollins screaming for mercy. And he said that was just business because Rollins was a designated target assigned by his benefactor, Triple H. Joe said that he cares about his clients, and because of what Rollins did to Hunter and, more disgustingly, Stephanie McMahon, it will now be very, very personal. And Rollins stood on the broadcast table with the mic and said, it will be personal because Joe almost cost him his career. Payback is a bitch. Congrats to Seth Rollins for being the guy who got to deliver the payback is a bitch line, which I assume will be around as long as WWE holds Payback every year. I don't know if they have a special drawing for that in the writer's room or how that works, but you just assume someone's going to use the line. But I like this. I thought they're obviously they'd announced a match earlier in the day, which is so weird. They'll announce a match for Payback before Raw, but they won't actually tell you much that's happening on Raw. But this was effective. I like the mic work, the back and forth. Rollins is like the super sweet, ultra nice guy babyface right now. Something's changed there. You know, I liked his mic work. Was it last week when he really played to the crowd? He must have been, because he didn't get to speak the day after Mania, which was so weird, coming off the big win against Triple H. But he did get a chance to speak last week, and I thought it was effective. And here, you know, he's just on commentary even, just super nice guy mode. So he's like the nicest guy in the world. And I think it's helping him. It's certainly been more effective than some of those bad promos they were giving him early on, where it's just like you could tell he's like saying things nobody would say, and it was pretty rough. Well, now he just kind of comes off like maybe a guy who's trying too hard to be nice, but at the same time, I think this is more effective. And Joe was really good here too. And the addition of that match to the Payback show, not that we didn't know it was coming, we weren't 100% sure, but you certainly assumed Well, suddenly Payback looks all right. You've got some stuff going on Payback now that feels pretty exciting. Backstage, you had Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson shown walking. They were going to face, they were going to have a tag match. Well, we also saw the Drifter, Elias Sampson, playing his guitar as they walked by. So the Drifter still drifting. And then the cameras cut to their opponents, R-Truth and Goldust. Thank God for Braun Strowman. He ended up attacking them, and then Adam Pearce, Finlay, and Jamie Noble entered the scene, barked at Strowman, and then tended to Golden Truth. And they went to a commercial break. So, yeah, the idea was we were going to see Gallows and Anderson against Golden Truth, but thanks to Braun Strowman, like, how does this not make him a babyface? Maybe not to everyone. I know R-Truth's entrance. As much as I feel like I've seen it 20 billion times now, I know it still gets a reaction from the live crowd. We got an ad for SmackDown. This may have been the weirdest announcement ever, as far as I'm concerned, because think about this. The six guys who are going to compete in the six-pack challenge, and the winner is going to become the number one contender to the WWE Championship. Sami Zayn just lost a triple threat match to become U.S. Number one contender to the U.S. title last week. Mojo Rawley. All right, at least he's won Battle Royals and beat Jinder Mahal. Dolph Ziggler probably loses more than he wins. Eric Rowan, well, he didn't take the RKO last week. They saved that for another week. Luke Harper, fine. I can live with him being in contention. Jinder Mahal, who gets beat up by Rob Gronkowski and Mojo Rawley all the time. Seriously, that's your... And what's worse, AJ Styles is number one contender to the U.S. Championship. AJ Styles is behind all of these guys, apparently, in line for a shot at the championship. I hope they just come out and say that, well, he would have been in this match, but he'd already become number one contender to the U.S. Championship. Now, it's not a big deal. I do like when there's some logic, like, well, why are these people in this match? And you can reach to make a case for some. But, yeah, you'd really be reaching. But that's tomorrow's SmackDown show. Doesn't mean it's going to be a bad match or anything. Just means it's pretty strange that... pretty strange logic in terms of who actually has an opportunity to challenge for the title. I wouldn't sweat it as far as, like, my God, which one of these guys are they going to give a pay-per-view match to? They don't have a pay-per-view until, you know, like a month from now, even longer, I think. I'll double-check that in a second. But, I don't think they're going to make this a pay-per-view match, just like I don't think they're necessarily going to wait for AJ against Owens until the pay-per-view. Well, that one I guess they could, but I just wonder if they're going to have, like, kind of a big TV big TV show where some of these championship matches occur. And I just looked it up, and the Backlash show is May 21st. So, yeah, a little over a month away. I mean, like I say, it's possible that they're going to go ahead with this. I guess we'll see who wins, and then we'll decide, all right, how serious are they? We'll have to warn, you know, and they may tell us before then, but we'll see. Then we had a broadcast team recap of the Strowman attack, and then backstage, a referee reminded Braun that Angle had given him the night off, and Strowman said he would leave when he wants to, and he stood up and said, unless you have a problem with that. And the referee wisely left the room. Anderson and Gallows stood in the ring for a promo. Anderson said Strowman gave Golden Truth the United Airlines treatment. That got a laugh. And yet they were the ones on standby. Gallows said Angle better round up some nerds from the locker room. Well, out came the nerds. Enzo Amore and Big Cass came out. They did their entrance shtick, and the crowd had some fun with it. And then in the second match of the night, it was Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson beating Enzo and Big Cass in 10:45. I went back and watched the finish of this a couple of times. I'm like, would something go wrong? No, I think it was the planned finish. It looked like the idea was that Karl Anderson ended up catching Enzo and tossing him, like, knees first onto the top rope in the corner, and then he tumbled down and he pinned him. And it looked like Enzo was fine. I mean, he landed safely on the top rope, and so assuming everything went according to plan, I kind of like it. You know, not every match has to end with a finisher, so it was kind of creative if that was by design. Anderson and Gallows get a much-needed win, of course, and the broadcast team did, at this point in the show, announced that Dash Wilder would miss 8 weeks with a fractured jaw, so they're confirming those reports, and it looks like... you know, they're going to need somebody to step up here for a couple of months. I don't know what they had planned for Revival. I guess that's one thing because, well, their matches had been with New Day. So it's not like there was something set that you could see coming. Like, oh, now what are they going to do? No Scott Dawson on this show. I'm guessing I mean, they could have him on, but I wonder if they'll just keep him off television, let him work the house shows, but keep him off television until Dash Wilder is ready to return. They basically gave kind of a teaser type, I don't know what you'd call it, just a brief video spotlighting each woman in the four-way match at different times. Mickie James was up first, and they were hyping that it was the first time in over 7 years that she would wrestle on Raw. Wow, time flies. Then Graves hyped the Miz TV segment, and then coming out of a break, we ended up with Nia Jax highlights. And then it was time for Miz TV. It was Dean Ambrose as the guest. He quickly interrupted Miz's promo. And this was Miz tearing into Ambrose and saying that he had all the momentum in the world after being drafted number one and headlining SummerSlam. And he said that Ambrose was now barely a blip on the radar. And he said Ambrose never breaks the glass ceiling because he's lazy and complacent. And I'm sure it's going to lead to speculation. Boy, is that Vince speaking through the writing of this? Hard to say. But Ambrose said it's about heart. He said he's not a brand. He's simply Dean Ambrose. And he said he does what he does because he loves it, and he'd do it in front of 20 people or 100,000 people. And he said that there's no one who does it like he does, and that's why he's the Intercontinental Champion. And Ambrose said Miz should know this because he beat him to win that title. Maurice ended up calling Ambrose a dirty little street rat and said walking around with a title doesn't make him a real champion. He said it's not the championship that makes the man, it's the man who makes the championship. And Ambrose ended up telling, Ambrose had Maurice hold his mic, and then he put down the title belt and he started emptying his pockets and took off his jacket and folded it very neatly. And Miz said that he's made the title the same thing that he is, a joke, referring to Ambrose, of course. Ambrose tackled Miz. Maurice struck Ambrose from behind, and he didn't, you know, he just kind of like was more surprised by it. It wasn't like he was selling it, but Miz tried to take advantage of the distraction, but Ambrose countered with a dirty deeds attempt. Miz ended up escaping that and going to ringside. So yeah, they're setting up Ambrose and The Miz. Boy, good thing these guys moved over from SmackDown to get fresh matchups, right? Wow. It just feels too soon, you know, and so it was like the mic work was fine, but I can't say that they held my attention. It's just like, they're going back to this? Isn't this part of the shakeup, as you kind of do some new things and the guys get fresh opponents and hopefully this is a one and done? Not that they don't work well together or anything like that. It's just, if you've been watching SmackDown, you've seen this not all that long ago. I can't say that this really excited me. Then we had a shot of Braun Strowman dragging Kalisto by the arm through the backstage area. He picked him up, slammed him into a garbage dumpster, and that was the last we saw of Kalisto all night. I'm guessing this signifies that Kalisto is now a proud member of the WWE Cruiserweight division, but we'll see. Big Show ended up shoulder blocking Strowman into a wall, which knocked him down, and told him to pick on someone his own size, and they went to a commercial. We had an ad for NXT hyping Ty Dillinger and Eric Young in a cage match. You can check out John Moore's review of that show, probably on, I would imagine, Wednesday night, maybe Thursday morning at the latest. Then we had a recap of Braun Strowman and Big Show. Then the broadcast team officially announced that match would be taking place a little bit later in the show. In the third match, we had TJ Perkins beating Jack Gallagher in 10-10. First, Neville came out to be with Perkins, and I like that Corey Graves referred to Perkins as the Hand of the King. Kind of a fun, I'm sure it comes up elsewhere, but I know it from Game of Thrones, and kind of applies here with Neville being the King of the Cruiserweights and all that. And because he came out, well, out came Austin Aries to make an even specialer appearance, as he put it. He sat down next to Neville and offered him a banana. Neville ended up moving his seat. Aries ended up eating the banana. And but the match was fun. You had Gallagher doing his big umbrella spot off the top, and but late in the match you had Aries standing up on the apron and taking his jacket off after Perkins ended up shoving Gallagher into him on the floor. Well, Neville tripped him up, and Aries took a big bump, and then Perkins ended up kicking the middle rope into the face of Gallagher and then hitting him with the detonation kick for the win. In 10-10. Now, the broadcast team, I think it was Cole, was making a big deal out of the fact that the referee was distracted by what was going on with Austin Aries. Is there some rule that you can't kick the rope into someone's face? I mean, it doesn't sound like a very nice thing to do. I don't have my official WWE rule book. I never got a copy of that. But no, it just kind of seemed weird that they almost were making it seem like that would be illegal. But at any rate, TJ Perkins wins. I'm liking that he's a heel, and I thought for sure this was going to lead to a tag match at the on 205 Live, and instead they later announced that it was going to be Austin Aries against Perkins in a singles match. Then we had Michael Cole narrate a brief Alexa Bliss video, and he did note that they were in her hometown of Columbus. And so then we ended up with Graves hyping Jeff Hardy in one-on-one action for the first time in over 8 years on Raw when he would face Cesaro, and they went to a commercial. Coming out of the break, Akira Tozawa was talking with Apollo Crews, saying he's so happy that he's on Raw. Titus O'Neil showed up, looked at him, and kind of gave him a head nod, like, get out of here. Why Tozawa left, I don't know, but he did. And then Titus congratulated Crews on the news that he's going to be a father for the first time. And then he started pushing the Titus brand on him. I still don't know what the Titus brand is. And his idea was that people could go on an Apollo Crews. And it just wasn't funny. This whole Titus brand thing is going nowhere. I was actually hoping, like, okay, Crews coming in, maybe they're going to do something different with Titus O'Neil since this whole Titus brand thing has been worthless. But nope, it's still business as usual. And I guess now we get to look forward to an eventual split, I would assume, between Titus and Apollo Crews. Can't wait. Not that Crews was really down with any of this. He was kind of basically in eye-rolling mode. Then we went backstage where Mike Rome interviewed the Hardys. They finally got a chance to speak, at least on Raw. They did talk on Raw Talk. Matt did make some comment to Rome that you couldn't really pick up. I tried to listen to it twice. What do you call him? I can't remember what it was, but that was the only thing that I'm like, was that kind of a broken kind of reference, but I couldn't really pick it up, and I don't remember exactly what the word was that I heard of the two. But Matt said, almost everything is different. Lights are brighter, the pyro is louder, and the current crop of WWE superstars are the most athletic they have ever faced. And Jeff said he thought he'd felt every emotion there was until they returned at WrestleMania. He said they're excited to be back and be part of the new era on Raw. So pretty, vanilla type of promo here. Sheamus and Cesaro showed up and welcomed them back, and things were there was a little bit of awkwardness. I don't know what exactly they're doing with Sheamus and Cesaro. Sheamus did have a line kind of implying that, yeah, without ladders, it's going to be an honor to beat you guys. And Matt said they don't need ladders to win their titles back. And Cesaro said to excuse my partner because he ruins a good time. And he said he wanted to keep it respectful, and he would see Jeff out there. And then Jeff told Rome that it's good to be back. The broadcast team then hyped Jeff Hardy and Cesaro, and Cole delivered the narration for a Sasha Banks video. And then Sasha made her entrance for the four-way match, and they went to a commercial. Then it was time for the other entrances, of course. And then in that the fourth match of the night, the four-way to become number one contender, it was Alexa Bliss winning. I knew right out of the gate, I'd predicted going into the show, like, oh, I assume they're going to go with Nia. Kind of seems like that's what they're hinting at on the WWE website. So that thing I bit for. But I did not bite when Michael Cole said out of nowhere that she was his favorite to win the match. They have to know that so many people, when the broadcast team predicts someone is going to win, especially when they just do it out of, enough as like every match or whatever, not that I want to see it, but just out of nowhere, Cole makes this weird prediction. It just was like, oh, she's not winning. Immediately. Why do that? I know they think there's part of the crowd that buys it. I really think there's a bigger part of the crowd going, oh, she's screwed. Maybe not bigger, but there's enough people out there that it's just not worth doing. So I don't know what advantage they think there is to this, but I wish it would stop. Now, it didn't ruin the match for me because there were three other women, and it was like, well, I don't think Mickey's going to win. I guess I could see Sasha winning if they wanted to, but it was, probably between Alexa and Sasha. They went with Alexa in her hometown. I know that's going to shock some of you. A win in the hometown. So women get to win in their hometown, men don't? Is that how it works? Because, Naomi's had some luck in her hometown, and now Alexa gets a win in her hometown. So, it's strange. WWE changing its ways, but I like this match. I thought it was well done. The finish was fun. You had Nia setting up for Samoan drop on Sasha, and then she was Bliss took out Jax and then ended up covering Banks for the win. So she was being opportunistic there. She did show fear of Jax throughout the match. They kept referring to her as 5 feet of fury. So they're obsessed with pointing out her height. And I wish they'd stop because I think they think about it more than the people watching do. But a good match. They did show Bayley watching it on the monitor, so that will be presumably a payback match. Then we went backstage where Big Show and Braun Strowman. Well, actually, Big Show said that Braun Strowman needs to find out what it's like to be intimidated, and he would give him a taste of his own medicine, giant style. There's a new WWE Network commercial, kind of focused on the usual things, but there's 24 specials coming on Finn Balor, Kurt Angle, and Bill Goldberg, if you didn't know that already. Then we had Kurt Hawkins stand in the ring and deliver a promo about Big Show being in the ring with him last week and now being in the main event this week. And he said, if you want to be a superhero, you enroll in Professor Xavier's School for the Gifted. If you want to be a main eventer, you get in the ring with Kurt Hawkins. He asked who it would be this week. And in a pleasant surprise, it was Finn Balor. Now, Balor beat him in 37 seconds. They made no reference whatsoever to the fact that he was concussed coming out of his match with Jinder Mahal last week. It's head trauma, and WWE's not going to really go there. But it was a nice surprise because we knew he would be backstage. It was reported that he'd be backstage. I mentioned it in the All Access show yesterday. But the idea was that he was going to be tested at the show today. And as I said yesterday in All Access, like, I assumed it meant good news. Like, they must think he's close. Didn't mean he was necessarily going to be on this show. So that was the nice surprise part of this. But you had to assume, like, all right, if this was really bad, now when, a lot of people get concussions, it's they want to be in a dark room and not see light and that sort of thing. You're not going to have a guy fly if he's in a bad condition, obviously. So it was kind of encouraging the fact that he would be there. But obviously, even more encouraging, the fact that he got in the ring and was able to do his thing. Didn't last long, but they wouldn't have had him out there had there been medical restrictions. So it was just good to see. He won with the coup de grace. Maybe we'll see. Maybe he will be in the Raw main event next week. Then Michael Cole hyped the Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt House of Horrors match for Payback. And we had actor Dulé Hill. I remember him from, Raw advertising for a USA Network show that I never watched. It sounded like it was a good. I can't even remember the name of the show. I know there were people that were into it, I just never watched that one. But I remembered him from that. Then after a commercial, Mike Rome interviewed Chris Jericho, and this was kind of more of the same with the Jericho calling Mike Rome Tom in reference to Tom Phillips, and Jericho indicating that there's no shame in losing to Joe. But he's distracted by his upcoming match with Kevin Owens. He said he would be a better face of America, and he poses for the camera, and I don't think this was intentional. I got a big kick out of it. As he's posing for the camera, he's kind of like almost voguing or something. Yeah, like he's got his arm up in that type, not that he was voguing, but in that type of like doing a picture frame kind of a deal. And in the process, he's showing off his big, what appears to be like a big Team Canada hockey tattoo. Because you've got like the Canadian goalie and all this different stuff, and it's like the face of America. I don't think it was intentional. If it was, good for him. Either way, I laughed. But Mike Rome reminded him of his name. Jericho asked if he's Mike or Tom. They went back and forth and had a little comedy set bit there. And then Jericho was about to put him on the list for not knowing his own name when Elias Sampson ended up walking behind them playing his guitar. And Jericho told Rome that he was off the hook. And he put Samson on the list instead. Then we got a Bray Wyatt video. He said he lives in fear with his House of Horrors. He said he knows Randy Orton is scared and he smells it. He said all of Orton's fears will come to life. And he said Orton will know pain, fear, and horror. This went on and on and on. And I lost interest because Bray Wyatt doesn't back up what he says. And I don't think he's going to here either. So, yeah, whatever. Can we just move on to the next Bray Wyatt feud? Because I'm ready for this whole Orton thing to end. I did, I was thinking about it tonight, and I mentioned this in my live review and on Twitter, but it bears repeating. This could be a really fun match, this whole House of Horrors thing, but only if they let Matt Hardy book it. I'm convinced that Matt Hardy could make this thing fun. I don't know that WWE creative can. I hope I'm wrong. Then we had Graves hyping the Jeff Hardy and Cesaro match, and there was they showed the graphic, and they had a sponsor. This sponsor has an owl mascot. So as they're hyping Jeff Hardy and Cesaro with the graphic, you see an owl on the screen. F that owl. I laughed. Backstage, Alicia Fox showed Dana Brooke the footage of a gift exploding in her face from 205 Live. Emma showed up and said Brooke was showing that video to everyone all week, and Dana said that wasn't true. Fox yelled at Brooke in an over-the-top manner and then said she didn't want to be her friend anymore and stormed off. And then Emma said Brooke wanted to stand on her own 2 feet, so she wants to see how she balances. Ding. Worst acting, right here. Right here. Mentioned it earlier. Alicia's just so over the top. I just, there's moments where her and Noam Dar are fun, but she tends to lose me when they have her go so far over the top with her crazy gimmick. And then Dana's limited when it comes to acting, especially as a babyface. I thought she was a good, loudmouth, obnoxious heel. I'm not convinced this babyface thing is going to work for her. I liked Emma here. Does that count? A little something. But yeah, pretty brutal. And then it was time for the dream match that they told us over and over again. It was Jeff Hardy with Matt Hardy in his corner defeating Cesaro, who had Sheamus in his corner in 13:05. Booker, Cole plugged the allergy relief company. And yes, the owl appeared on camera as the match was getting underway. Somebody in WWE knew exactly what they were doing. I doubt anyone would own up to it publicly, but you had to laugh. Doesn't mean that little advertising isn't going to be around in future weeks and used for other people, but the first time, come on, they knew exactly what they were doing. That's very comical. I believe there was a Brother Nero chant early on. The match itself was not outstanding. I mean, it didn't live up to their hype of feeling like a dream match. They gave him 13 minutes, and it was fine. I think part of it, the crowd seemed fatigued. I don't know that this crowd was particularly well mic'd either. There were times when it seemed like they were louder than they were coming. They appeared to be louder than they seemed to be coming across through my sound system. But you know, either way, here they are. It's two baby faces without any real issues. And what's the crowd supposed to get all fired up by? You know, and so it's just kind of you react to the moves and things like that. I look forward to the Hardys when they have a real program. And this may develop into one. Jeff ended up winning with the Swanton Bomb. And it was a competitive back-and-forth match, by the way. And then afterwards, Sheamus and Cesaro offered handshakes. And it's like, oh, what's going on here? Matt and Jeff very reluctantly accepted the handshakes, and things were fine. So you're just sitting there going, all right, when's this going to blow up? When are Sheamus and Cesaro going to do something? They're looking like nice guys right now. Are they luring them into a false sense of security? How is this going to play out? And I'm not sure. I mean, there's only a week left. There's only one more Raw left now before the pay-per-view. Are they just going to play it straight? Or are they going to just play it straight next week and try to lure the fans into a false sense of security as far as the story goes, and then have them cheat at the pay-per-view or something like that? I'm not sure. It's kind of interesting. Nothing may happen, but I'm kind of interested in just seeing how that all plays out. So mildly interesting, but I don't think it's doing anything great for the Hardys right now. We need to see them, as much as I'd like to see them doing the broken gimmick again, if that's not going to happen, we got to get something that they can really sink their teeth into. But this is still developing, so we'll see how it goes. And I guess you also have to wonder, were the Hardys going to face Revival? And if so, maybe Sheamus Cesaro was going to be kind of a one-and-done type of thing. I'm not sure. Whatever the case, you do have to wonder if they're going to get more time in this program just because of the fact that the Revival, with Dash Wilder being sidelined for a couple of months. But I'm not sure on that one. The broadcast team spoke over footage of Braun Strowman and Big Show from earlier in the night. And then Mike Rome stood in front of the trainer's room and started to give an update on Kalisto and Golden Truth. He was interrupted by Heath Slater and Rhino. Never went back to it. So the world is left wondering, my God, did Kalisto survive being dragged by the arm and then body slammed into a dumpster that was filled with what appeared to be nice soft trash? And as I'm guessing the update was going to be that the word on Kalisto is that he stinks right now, but he hopes to shower soon. And then Golden Truth, I don't know. I didn't care. No update there. I guess the world will have to wait for the WWE website update on that. No, I will not have that update on the main page of ProWrestling.net, I can assure you. Anyway, basically Slater talked about how they weren't even drafted, or he wasn't even drafted last year yet. He and Rhino became the first SmackDown Tag Champions. Rhino was eating crackers and Cheese Whiz, and everything was fine, and then all of a sudden Braun walked by, and they both jumped up against the wall like they were just petrified. I can see Slater doing it. Rhino? I mean, I know it's Strowman and he's the ultimate monster, but I don't know, it just didn't really seem to fit with Rhino's character. Not that you would expect Rhino to put up a strong fight like Big Show did, for instance, with Strowman, but you would think that he'd at least have the balls to do it. Just when I think of the Rhino character, I at least think, hey, he tried to put up a fight at least. He's not just going to back down, which is kind of the way this felt. But after commercial break, we got that same commercial hyping the six-pack challenge for SmackDown. And then we had some hype for TJ Perkins and Austin Aries on 205 Live. Actually, this was the official announcement. And then it was main event time. And it was, as I said, Braun Strowman. Well, he didn't even beat Big Show. They fought to an apparent no contest is what it was in 13 minutes. They did, after the big buildup, they did the superplex off the top. And yes, the ring collapsed. And yes, some of you saw this back in the day with Brock Lesnar and Big Show. And I'm sure somebody out there is going, ah, it's a repeat, blah, blah, blah. You know what? This crowd, I'm sure many of the people in that crowd were very aware of it, and they loved it. Oh, man, did the place pop for that. If you recall the last time these guys had a match against one another, they teased the superplex a couple of times, and it never happened. It was kind of the one thing where it's like, man, boy, that place would have just completely went nuts had one of them hit a superplex. Well, they hit it here, and the fans did go completely nuts. So the ring has collapsed, and then Braun Strowman is the first guy to get to his feet, and he just stands up and kind of plays to the crowd like he won. The fans did chant yes, by the way, after the big spot. But yeah, he just kind of raised his arm and let out kind of a primal scream, and then his music played, and that was it. So he gets kind of the idea is it was a no contest. There wasn't a pin or anything like that. But they wanted to show that Strowman was the first guy up. Like, show was still down as the show went off the air. Not that they hung around long after this. But the idea, you know, obviously was that, man, nothing can stop this Strowman guy. Even the ring collapsing, he's back on his feet. I like it. They didn't give you a finish. There are a lot of, you know, there's times where we'll piss and moan about wrestling companies not delivering a clean finish at times when they need to and all of that. Well, this is one of those times where you can get away with not doing it. And I think it actually works out. Because now you can come back to this. Had Strowman beaten Big Show again? You know, didn't he eliminate him from the Dre? I think he did. But he won their last singles match, and if he just beats him here again, even a competitive match, it's like, well, you know how that's going to go in future encounters, at least, you know, for the time being, where now you can get another match out of it. You could do it again next week if you wanted to. I wouldn't. I'd kind of save that. But so I like the non-finish because it kind of left you. Whether it left you wanting more or not, it gives them room to kind of reintroduce this and remind people that, hey, the last time these guys fought, there was no winner. So there's a way to come back to this. And so I did like the non-finish here. And it was, as far as like comparing it to the previous match, I'd really do have to go back and watch it because the previous match was just so unexpectedly good. You know, where it was like, I can't believe how much fun this is. And these guys worked really hard, but I just remembered last match feeling stronger about it. Like, man, this is so much fun. But it might not be fair because my expectations may have been so high because of that match. You know, so just, and not even really recalling everything that happened. Like I say, I kind of feel like I need to go back and watch that match again. Maybe I'm not doing this one justice, but I do remember feeling much higher on the previous match again, but they worked really hard here. And this was still a very entertaining super heavyweight style match. The fans kind of slow to get into it, but then by the end and some of the bigger moves they were doing, the fans were very into it. And so it closed the show on a high note. And it was the most memorable thing on this show, even if you have seen the Lesnar and Big Show ring collapse segment before. Hey, you know, who's to say the ring can't collapse twice? And the excuse, if they want, now they were kind of talking like, this is why we reinforced the rings. The excuse can be, well, this match developed throughout the course of the night, so they didn't get to reinforce this ring so that the next time they do, they're prepared for it. And they can advertise it ideally at least a week in advance, if not for a pay-per-view, and the ring will be enforced at that point. It'll be super reinforced, however you want to say it. Just because you saw the angle once before or saw the spot once before with the ring collapsing, doesn't mean you can't go back to it. I don't have a problem with it. It's been so many years since they've done it. I think it's a cool idea. And so the fans in that building absolutely loved it. So there is that. And I have a feeling that there's a lot of people watching that don't remember that, weren't old enough to see it. Or, you know, if you saw it, you remember it, I think. I think it's safe to say. But otherwise, you know, there's a lot of people out there that maybe heard about it, but others who were just too young. They didn't see it, and so this is new to them, and they're loving it. They're thinking it's pretty cool. And I did as well, and I thought it was a good close to the show. Overall, I felt like this show had enough going on that it held my interest, with some of the women's match and Jericho and Joe early. I really liked the first hour of the show, and the crowd seemed to get a little burned out as things went on, but you still had that, like I said, the women's match, Cesaro and Jeff Hardy. The anticipation of it was probably funner than the actual match was in some ways. Not that it was a bad match or anything, but just kind of cool thinking, like, all right, I know this may not be a show-stealing match, but it can still be pretty cool to see Cesaro and Jeff Hardy in the ring on Raw together for the first time. That's fun. Or just Jeff working, as they were saying, the first singles match on Raw in over 8 years. Just fun going into it. Like, that kept me engaged. And then the main event itself. So, yeah, I thought it was a good show overall with some nice progression, or at least match announcements and things, setting up the Payback show. Finally, if you enjoy hearing the full-length audio reviews of WWE Raw, know that members hear this on a weekly basis. I know you guys hear it sometimes on the All Access side of things, but the members hear my Raw audio review each and every Monday night. I guess the occasional Tuesday as well. If, like, for instance, my Minnesota Vikings are playing a Monday night football game, I might push it back. So very rare that it gets pushed back to Tuesday, or if I go to the show or something like that, then it gets pushed back. But almost every Monday night, the members are hearing my full-length audio review of the show. And they also hear full-length audio reviews of SmackDown, NXT, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling. The list goes on. We cover all of our shows in audio form, including we have Lucha Underground reviews when those shows are new as well. And you can access our entire audio history. So if you are watching the Lucha Underground show on Netflix, you kind of wish you had some feedback on it, you'd like to hear what people thought at the time, you can go back and listen to either Will Pruitt and or John Moore's reviews of those shows. Membership rates start as low as $7.50 per month for our ad-free website. And yes, the mobile site also becomes ad-free when you become a .NET member. But you can actually whittle that price down if you take advantage of our six-month or annual option. The annual option knocks $2 off the price every month, bringing the average down to $5.50 per month. If you have any questions, shoot me an email, dotnetjason@gmail.com. That's dotnetjason@gmail.com. Or hit me up on Twitter at Pro Wrestling Net. That's going to do it for now, everybody. I will be back. If all goes according to plan, I will be joined by a special guest for Wednesday's All Access show. So until next time, take care.